Okay, hi everybody, I'm Wayne Parham, and I'm going to do a talk on crossovers. I do this thing every year, so if you've already seen it, it'll probably bore you to death. But on the internet, there is a document. I should have printed out a bunch, but I didn't. There's a document you can download for free that has this the same document that I'm going off of now. So you can grab it if you want for reference, because a lot of this stuff is reference material. It's, you know, formulas and things that you can use when designing your own crossovers. Basically, it's just like a brush-up refresher course. It teaches you a little bit about Ohm's law and reactive circuits. And so the formulas that I'm talking about that are for reference are these types of formulas. You know, the series circuit, Ohm's law formula, the reciprocal of reciprocals for parallel, capacitive inductive reactance, reactive impedance when there's coils and resistors, resonance. So those are good for reference. And I'm gonna kind of fly through the part on. I need to start this, don't I, Melissa?
No, I
didn't. Okay. I'm going to kind of fly through the part on, resistors, because it's so simple. And what I'm really actually trying to do with this is to kind of show everybody what happens with the reactive components and how they interact with the drivers themselves. There's some more of the reference formulas. And one that I think in particular is important here is the decibel. That's a real handy one to know. If you know the two voltage levels, how many decibels difference that is, or if you know two power levels, how many decibels difference that is, because in our loudspeakers, you know, we're oftentimes talking in terms of decibels. But then the measurable things, unless you're measuring, you know, acoustics, the measurable things are voltage and power. Okay, on the simple stuff, Ohm's law. Again, you got two resistors in series, you add them together, you got two in parallel, you use this formula that's the reciprocal of reciprocals, which I think most of you are probably familiar with. The main thing to make note of on this is that, you know, when you have a couple of resistors in series, you have a voltage divider. And then later, when we start talking about reactive components, you still have a voltage divider, but reactive components are frequency sensitive, so they do different stuff. In a resistor, you know, a couple of resistors, you can expect it to act very purely. It's going to divide the signal in two, and, you know, and it's going to be a proportion dependent on the values of the resistor. And frequency doesn't matter, you know, in a perfect resistor. Of course, there's a few little things inside each resistor that are a little tiny bit reactive, but fundamentally they're not frequency sensitive. And that would be an example of a very simple voltage divider. I've used 8 ohms as the load in this circuit, simply because speakers are 8 ohms typically. It's a value that we're all kind of familiar with. And in this circuit, it's like a no-brainer. You got an 8 ohm load, you got an 8 ohm series resistor. You can tell that the division of energy in that circuit is going to be somewhat intuitive at this level. You can calculate up things and run the numbers. If I were to say put a 10 volt signal across this circuit, then I can use the formulas and the reference, the first couple of pages of this, and I can see that. If I have 10 volts across this and add these two together using the formulas, you find you got 16 ohms, then you would find that 10 divided by 16 is, I already did this before, 625 milliamps. Okay? So then you're going to know that 625 milliamps is flowing through the circuit. Okay? So then to know what voltage is across the load, maybe a speaker or whatever, then you would take that 625 milliamps flowing through the circuit, multiply it times the 8 ohm load, and then you would find the voltage across that resistor was 5. So intuitively we knew we were splitting it 50-50, but you run the numbers and you find that it's doing as you expected. If you wanted to calculate how many decibels that was, again using the formulas that are in the front of this document, you would say 20 log of the voltage difference, which was 5 volts here, 10 volts was across it, you would find out that this was a 6 decibel drop. So by putting this 8 ohm resistor in series with the 8 ohm load, you've generated a 6 decibel drop. Now, similar situation, but now we have different values, so it's not as intuitive, it's not a 50-50 split. Still just an exercise in running the numbers, so I'm not going to bore you by going through all of that. In this case, we have a 25 ohm series resistor, it's cutting the power, it's cutting the current more, which then is cutting the power across this resistor. If you calculate the current flow through there using a sample 10 volt reference, then you'll find that you have 303 milliamps. 303 milliamps times the 8 ohms turns out to be 2.48 volts. 20 log of that is 12.3. That produces a 12.3 decibel drop. Okay. Parallel. This is what you see in your arrays. Sometimes you'll put series and parallel drivers in there, and then you're trying to come up with a specific impedance. Parallel values, those two, would be a 4 ohm. The equivalent resistance there would be 4 ohms. So you calculate the current flow through this circuit. You'd have 10 volts. It would be across 4 ohms. So in this case, you'd have 1.25 amps. And you can then know that if I have 10 volts, if I get 10 volts across, 10 volts across the 8 ohms is 1.25 amps. The total is 2.5 amps, because that would be 4 ohms. 10 divided by 4 would be 2.5 amps. Okay, now here's an arrangement. This is a series parallel arrangement. This is exactly what you see when you buy an L-panel. When you pad a driver, this is what you're doing. You have a series component and you have a parallel component across your load. And the idea with this is that once you calculate all of these values, 2.7 ohms in parallel with 8 ohms ends up being 2 ohms. This equivalent circuit is 2. And then the 2 ohm and the 6 ohm becomes 8. So the load here is 8. It also provides some damping, which if these are all pure resistances, won't matter. But when we start looking at the reactive components, that becomes real, real, real significant, the balance between these two values. But if we run the numbers on this whole thing, what we'll see is that this circuit is providing a 12 decibel drop to that resistor, and the math is shown there. Again, if you want to, you can download this document, and it has all these. In fact, this is the document that you can download. It's on the audio roundtable. It's also on the Lone Star Audio Fest. If you go to the Lone Star Audio Fest site, and go to the section called Schedule, which has got all of these seminars listed, there's a link there. So you and it'll go to one of the forum pages that's got these dot files. Okay, now here's the part I really wanted to get to, is when we start talking about reactive components. Can you guys see that? Is that... Yeah, let's do. Thank you. Perfect. Okay, that's perfect. Thanks. Okay. Now, reactive components are capacitors and inductors, and they're frequency sensitive. A capacitor is basically just two sheets of metal separated by a dielectric of space, and its impedance rises as frequency drops. At high frequencies, it lowers its impedance, and that's why we use it as a crossover for tweeters. It lets the highs go through. And coils are just the opposite. It's just a coil wire, but it provides very low impedance to DC and low frequency signals, and the impedance rises as the frequency goes up. The formulas for calculating the impedance of any given value are right here. They're in the front couple of pages of reference formulas. If you have, as an example, a 10 microfarad capacitor, what you find is that 100 hertz, it's 159 ohms. At 1K, it's 16 ohms. And at 10K, it's 1.6 ohms, round numbers. So you can see that as the frequency goes up, the impedance goes down. The coil, just picked a value here too, a 2 millihenry inductor at 100 hertz is 1.25 ohms, at 1 kilohertz is 12.5 ohms, and at 10 kilohertz is 125 ohms. Again, that's why we use them for crossover components. They act as a voltage divider, just like that Ohm's Law thing did, where we had the two 8-ohm resistors. That's a divider. But when I substitute one of those for a reactive component, now I've got a divider that is frequency sensitive. You know, it'll divide it in such a way that more high frequencies go, say, to a tweeter, and it tends to block the lows. Or for a coil, it will divide it so that more low frequencies go to the woofer, and it will block the highs. If you have two reactive components of the same type, say two coils in this example, then it becomes a pure voltage divider, just like the two resistors were. This thing, if you have two 1 millihenry coils in series, then the division is going to be really no matter what frequency it is. And so that is a simple circuit to kind of get your arms around. If you go to a circuit that has two reactive components of the same type but different values, in this case, this example is a 3.3 millihenry coil and a 1 millihenry coil, it's the same idea in that the proportion is always fixed. Just like in the earlier example with the 25 ohm resistor and the 8 ohm resistor. Of course, since they're coils, as frequency goes up, the total impedance across here is going to go up. But the proportion across them is going to be the same, so the voltage division is going to be the same. Now here's something that's more like what you see in a crossover. That's the one we were talking about. You got a capacitor in series with an 8 ohm load, and so what you're going to see is that at that load, at high frequencies, you got more energy distributed to it than at low frequencies, and that's because, you know, the capacitor is frequency sensitive. His impedance is dropping as frequency goes up. The resistor is staying fixed, so the proportion of the division is changing, and that's why the crossover works. In these examples, you know, we've done all the numbers like I did with Ohm's Law, and so, you know, you can follow through those and see, you know, and quantify the performance. And that's exactly what I've done here. And I think I'll run through that because it's more interesting than the resistor one. Let's see if I can put these somewhat side by side. Right there. All right. In this case, if you've got that capacitor and there's no coils in there, if you refer to your your reference formulas, then what you find is that total impedance equals the square root of resistance squared plus you've got the inductive reactance and the capacitive reactance. You subtract those from one another. In this case, there isn't any inductive reactance. There's no coil in that thing. So that value is zero. No inductive reactance. So it's basically just I'd already made an assumption that we were checking this thing out at 2 kilohertz here, and found that the capacitive reactance of that capacitor was 8 ohms, hand figure. And so in this example, impedance equaled A squared, which is the resistor, plus A squared, and that's the capacitive reactance of that capacitor at 2 kilohertz. So impedance equaled the square root of 128, which was 11.31 ohms. Now that's kind of interesting if you're not real familiar with reactive circuits, but you are familiar with Ohm's law. If you're kind of used to thinking in terms of resistors and you got an 8 and an 8, you know that's 16, or you got a couple of speakers, you know there's an 8 and an 8, and you're expecting 16, then that makes you kind of take a double take. If I know this guy's 8 ohms because I ran the numbers, my formula tells me at 2 kilohertz he's 8 ohms, and I know he's 8 ohms, you kind of think intuitively that the total circuit would be 16 ohms. And so when you do this calculation here and you find that you're less than 12 ohms, you kind of think you've done something wrong. You haven't. And the reason that is that capacitance is time shifted from resistance. And inductance is time shifted again from that. The energies are happening inside those units in different phase angles, and they're each 90 degrees apart. In a capacitor, the voltage literally jumps that gap before the current can build across it. Okay? So there's a time lag in the amount of power that's going through the thing. Power is voltage times current, and they're doing it at different rates. The coil's just the opposite. The coil, the current goes zinging through that thing, but it takes a little while for voltage to develop across it. And the pure resistor, they happen at the same time. The voltage goes across it, current flows at the rate determined by the voltage across the resistor. So, bottom line, you got two different types of reactive components in a circuit. Funny stuff starts to happen. Okay, here is a response curve of that last little circuit that had the cap and the resistor. The resistor's pure resistance, cap's pure capacitance. You get this nice little curve. Very little energy is transferred to that resistor at low frequencies. As the frequency goes up, the curve smoothly ramps up to full power being applied out at very high frequency. And again, it is a smooth curve with no funny spots. That's the curve of a first order crossover, because that's what a single cap and a resistor is. It's first order. Okay. Now here's a cool one. This is a capacitor and a coil in series. That's actually a resonator. Or a tank circuit, some people might call it. The thing is, and we'll get to this later, but I kind of want to point it out. If you think about it, if you have a second order crossover, and you don't hook your tweeter up over here, that is a second order tweeter crossover if there's a tweeter hanging out over there. Well, if you don't hook a load to it, you've got a resonator. Resonators are bad for your amplifier. So don't ever take your tweeter crossover or any kind of crossover above first order and hook it up to your amp without a load, because there will be a frequency, it'll just shorten it. And we'll go through that a little bit too. These two components I just picked because they had convenient values. If you want to find the resonant frequency of those two components in that configuration, you use this formula. You run the numbers, you find these at 2 kilohertz, 2054 hertz. Okay? If you then calculate the impedance of the capacitor at that 2000 hertz, then you use your formulas from the reference charts and you find out that at 2000 hertz, he's 7.74 ohms. Okay? That's actually the coil. It's X sub L, inductive reactance, 7.74 ohms at 2054 hertz. Do the same thing for the cap. You find out he is also 7.74 ohms. That's why they're at resonance. The impedance is equal. Okay? But now, when you find the total impedance across the source, you use the formula from the reference formulas. There is no resistance here except what's in the wire. So resistance is zero. There's no R there. There is only the X sub L minus the X sub C. Inductive reactance minus capacitive reactance. Those are equal. So it's zero. And literally that's what happens. At resonance, it's short. The impedance across the circuit is zero. The only impedance you have is the impedance of the wires. Right. In this case, only at 2054 hertz. That's right. If you ran a test tone into that, and it was hooked up to this little amplifier, the test tone is at 1K, you're fine. Yeah, he's going to have a load of, probably 16 ohms or something. But then as you got closer to 2054 hertz, it'd drop to zero, and then if you went back up above it, it'd rise up again. When it hits zero, if you're running your little sweep and you just hang right there, you're going to smell a burning smell if you got any power out of your output transistors or whatever. So that's bad. And we have a little picture of that response chart here. These are all done with SPICE, by the way. It's a neat little circuit modeling tool. You can download it also off the website, and it'll let you plug in circuits to see what they do. All of these charts, except a few that came from measurements, most of these charts are coming from SPICE. That's the transfer curve of the circuit that we just did, and as you can see, we go out to infinity up there as far as the that's actually the voltage across one of the components. And that's another one that's interesting that I should point out. You got a 10 volt source. That was the example in all of these that I use. Okay? And this is what would really happen if you took a 10 volt signal generator, a 10 volt sine wave generator, and then you hung an oscilloscope off of one of your reactive components. Okay? You get 10 volts in this thing, now hang a scope off of the coil, let's say. What you're going to see is the voltage across that coil way up above 10 volts. It's actually, and then now you start thinking, ooh, that's free power. Well, what's happening is that time shift thing, the power is being stored in one component and then bucked over into the other component, bucked back over. And so it's doing just like a pendulum would do. In a pendulum, you just barely give it any energy input. You get a large swing. That's the nature of resonance. It happens in mechanical systems. It happens in electrical systems. You get a tiny bit of energy, a lot back out, but it's not actually creating any energy. It's just transferring it back and forth in a pretty efficient way. Now, if you took and put just a 1 ohm series resistor in that, So now it's a 10 microfarad cap, and I think I had a 6 millihenry coil. And then just put a 1 ohm resistor in there. I mean, that'll save your amp. It'll make your peaking less. And that's important because in our crossover circuits, I mean, sometimes we're going to need, that's called damping. You're using the resistor to damp the amount of energy that can be transferred between those two things. And you can mess around with the amount of peaking. Peaking is not a bad thing. And I'm getting ahead of myself, but I mean, when we make a phase reflex speaker, we're tuning the amount of peaking. You know, we're pushing up a bottom area just enough to where it's flat. If you pushed it up too much, you'd be underdamped, and you'd be big old bass peak. If you didn't push it up enough, you'd be overdamped, and you'd roll off slow. Same thing in the electrical circuits. Okay. Now, and this is a little circuit that has some of the same components that we were just discussing. He's got a 10 microfarad cap. In this case, he's got a little 0.3 millihenry coil and a 6 ohm resistor. Now, the reason I chose those values in this case is that you can model a tweeter, a little dome tweeter. One of the simplest models, short of just calling him an 8 ohm resistor, which is a very bad model of a speaker, by the way. They don't act like a resistor hardly at all. Ribbons sometimes do. But you got a little soft dumb tweeter. A decent model of it is a coil and a resistor. Because the voice coil's got a certain amount of DC resistance. It's usually about 6 ohms. If it's an 8 ohm tweeter, that's why I picked 6. It's got, you know, it's a coil, so there's some inductance. And that makes a decent model. Doesn't include mechanical resonance. You can model that as a little tank circuit. We'll show that later. If it's on a horn, it doesn't include any of the quarter wave resonances that the horn did. You can model those with a whole bunch of other little tank circuits. But frankly, above the resonant frequency of the tweeter, because you ain't gonna want to cross over below it anyway, and above the resonant frequency, it is pretty much a resistance and a coil, so that makes a decent model up high. You can run the numbers on this thing like we were just doing, or you can plug it into SPICE and see what kind of a curve you're going to get out of it. This would then be a good model of your tweeter with a first order crossover of a 10 microfarad cap. And you can get these two numbers from most manufacturers. You can measure the 6 ohm one real easy with an ohm meter, if it's a good one. You can measure this value with something like Speaker Workshop or a Wheatstone Bridge. So the point is, those aren't terribly difficult numbers to get a hold of so that you can do a good model of your tweeter circuit. And what you find is, that's what a first order crossover looks like with a tweeter that is basically 6 ohms resistance and 0.3 millihenry of voice coil inductance. Now you'll notice that we got a little bit of peaking. We got a little bump down in the bottom end as compared with a pure first order. You see the two curves? You'll notice that in the real world, with our tweeter having both inductance and resistance, you got this peak right there. It's not much. That's not bad. But, you know, if the values were different, it might have become bad. At the least, it's good to know, you know, what it's doing. You got a little bit of more energy down near the crossover frequency as a result of that simple first order filter. That is why I oftentimes suggest to put a damping resistor across my tweeters. And it's usually not 8 ohms. If it's an 8 ohm tweeter, you usually can put a 10 or 20 ohm resistor across it and damp the circuit enough to bring that top part back down. You don't want to go so low with that that you're now making your 8-ohm tweeter turn into a 4-ohm. I mean, you might, but it's just something to bear in mind. It usually works out best if you have a little bit of damping, even if you're trying to be a minimalist and you want to have just one part or no parts at all. I've found that usually a nice, good quality mils or something, a good resistor across that tweeter will give you a better result. Now we're going to look at a closer to real world tweeter. This is a better model of any speaker because this shows the voice coil resistance, the voice coil inductance, and the mechanical resonance. This is a good one of a woofer, a tweeter, anything. It's not on a horn, not in a transmission line, it's just open air. And you know, to find those values, you have to do some measurements. If you know the resonant frequency and the Q of the driver, you can calculate the equivalent circuit. And then you have a model, a SPICE model, that it's actually showing you what the thing's really doing. And what you find is some interesting stuff happens that didn't appear in the earlier models. You see the little peak down there about 400 hertz. He's actually not a little peak, he's actually about 4 decibels. He's not very wide, so it's not terribly audible, but you can hear it. If you compare him side by side with one that's damped and was removing that peak, you'll hear a little bit in the voice range. This guy will be a little throatier because of that peak. And that's what really happens if you have a tweeter and a single cap in front of it, because of all of the interactions, the voltage divider network that you have made between a capacitor, which has a nice smooth kind of curve like that, and his impedance, and your driver, which really has a pretty crazy curve. He's got that big peak at resonance, or maybe not big, but he has a peak at resonance, then he comes down, then he rises from voice coil inductance, and all the interactions, all that gives you a curve that looks like that. Okay? And so that is even more the reason why I like to put a damper resistor across it, because that same little model I just did, if I put a 20 ohm resistor across it, which has done very little to lower the impedance of the tweeter, he's an 8 ohm tweeter and I put 20 ohms across it, it's now like 6.8 ohms or something, that's fine, but look at what I've done to my peak, it's gone. If I go with an 8 ohm damper, which I think is probably a little low, but if you don't care to have a 4 ohm load at high frequencies, and most speakers, that's fine. You know, look at your curve then. Now the curve's looking very much like a real first order. It's probably slightly over damped, which is fine because you're wanting to shave off the bottom end anyway. Well, it's a great question, Skip. You look where you have this. You know, that guy, the tweeter's resonant frequency on that's 400 hertz, and that crossover looks like he's about a 2K. So you're pretty high above, your crossover's pretty high. And if you'd shifted him out to where you were, you know, he's one of those super tweeter things where he's a 10K, you're going to have that peak still, but he's going to be way down here. So I mean, that's up to you to kind of decide. I mean, you're right, if you're crossing over way high, that peaks down there, but consider that you can see that our resonance here was at 400 hertz on that tweeter, or 500, somewhere around there, and we were thinking we were crossing over at 2K, and that's, you know, a couple octaves up, and yet our peak there was really only 6 decibels down. So, you know, and you're kind of thinking, you were really expecting your crossover to be more like 12 decibels down at that point. But so for that little bitty deal at 400 hertz, you're only 6 decibels down. And so that means you're hearing it. It's there. Yeah, I think if I were crossing a tweeter as a super tweeter, and his resonance was below like 1K. I might not care about it. Yeah, I don't think I put a damper across that. But if I've got a beeping tweeter with a resonance of 400 or 500 hertz and I'm crossing it 2K, I'm gonna slap some resistor across it just to help. Okay. Here is one where I have, this is a circuit that's really only backwards. This is a circuit that's really only interesting to horn guys. If you have a tweeter that's sagging on the top, like a compression driver horn, you know, they put out a lot of energy in the vocal overtone range, and then they have a 6 decibel per octave roll off. And so you EQ them in your crossover. And so you'll use something like this typically. You'll pad the thing 10 decibels or so, and then you'll bypass your pad with the capacitor to lift the top. Nice effective EQ. And the thing is that if you did it too simply, if you tried to oversimplify your circuit by just putting a series resistor in there, now you got a lot of bad stuff kind of happening because you're way under damped in that configuration, and it gives you a pretty big spike down here. This is one where you'd really want to have some kind of padding that was a series parallel pad rather than just the series thing. And those are some of the kinds of things that really, if you're just putting something together with your calculator and you're kind of doing it blind, you can kind of overlook that. It's not intuitive. What I've done here is to do exactly that. Put a damper resistor in there. Put a pad. I've got my series cap. That's the crossover cap. He's the 10 microfarad. And I've laid the bypass resistor sideways on this picture. You know, there's that 3.7 ohm series resistor to the driver and the bypass cap to give me the lift up here. That's what those two are. But now I've got a parallel resistance across there to provide a little more load on that crossover cap, and it damps the whole thing. And I mean, you can see how much it damps it. I don't have my spike. You can play with the values of R1 and R2. We call that R12. You can play with those values to set the amount of damping here. You can even, if the series value were higher and the parallel value were lower on this, then you can make kind of a shelf, which can be attractive in some cases. I mean, I use that. I do that on my speaker. Yeah.
Now, based on this graph and the other ones, I've heard it said commonly, never in some data. How do you find out the crossover? They're saying it is -3 dB.
If you're a first order crossover, straight single tap, then at the point where the inductive reactants, the capacitor, if it's a tweeter, is impedance equals the load. So in this case, let's say the frequency where you got an 8-ohm tweeter and the cap is also 8 ohms, then you're going to be 3 decibels down at that point. And a lot of people call that the crossover frequency. Below that, 6 decibels and off. So.
Are there factors for this part that relate to the reactive components of the driver and or the injector?
Absolutely. Yeah. That all comes into play. It's all a system. And it's a electromechanical acoustic system. All the stuff's interacting with one another. Yeah, the horn becomes probably the most significant part on a horn. It's quarter wave modes. You know, the first couple provide the biggest peaks. And if it's a direct radiator, it's the mechanical resonance of the radiator. Now, this is, and this one's a little hard to follow when I don't have slides side by side, but this is actual measurements of a compression horn with a 10 microfarad cap in series. I can lay them. You can kind of compare if I just lay them down. Okay. This shows you real world measurements. And they're not hugely significant, but it does show you that something's really happening and it's not just on models. It verifies. In this case, you'll see this energy right here. He's right on the, you know, he's right on the, he's below the knee of the crossover. This guy's been crossed over like this. I mean, you can see that general trend. But you'll notice how much more energy. In this case, about 5 decibels extra energy right here. And that's directly a result of the peaking that happened between the crossover cap and the reactive nature of the horn and compression driver system. So that's not terrible. In fact, a person might even want to take advantage of that because you gave him some, except for that little peak there, that's probably the second mode. You know, he's kind of gives you a nice, he's not like a big peak like this. He's, so you could use that. But if you didn't know to expect it, you would find that you had more energy at 400 or 500 hertz than you thought you did. Again, I take advantage of that. I designed my crossovers on purpose to do that, kind of like right where I want it, and I'll show you that in a minute. This one, I have the same crossover cap, but I've damped it. I put a damper across it. And you'll see, it's kind of hard to line them up, but you'll see that my damper sucks some of the energy back out. Looks like not quite 5 decibels, probably 3 to 4 decibels for putting the damper resistor across it. And the rest of that is not terribly interesting. I'll just go back and forth showing you what happens if you do this and that. I'm going to blow that all off. Well, I want to show you one more. This one will kill you. That is the response curve of the woofer without a... That's what happens if you put a second order crossover on a woofer and you don't have a Zobel on it. The voice coil inductance, and it's worse on stuff that's, you know, the big powerful woofers but a lot of mass, so that they're needing motor damping. I mean, they're using QES to damp the woofer, and they got a lot of weight throwing around, so there's a lot of back EMF, right? And the interaction between that kind of a woofer and your tank circuit, your resonator that is your second order crossover, makes a huge peak. I mean, and you can really hear it. You put a resistor damper across that, and you'll take that all out. You'll get a nice little, he'll have a little bump, but he'll just scroll right off by just putting a Zobel across it. So that's important. I'll either run a Zobel on it, or I won't run anything but a series coil, because I mean, you just can't. Okay, now we're going to actually make some noise so that you can see these circuits. And they're some of the same ones we just talked about. That's the first order. And that's what I'm going to play right now. So whatever music comes on this radio station, I just picked a random station. And I don't have a woofer, so it's going to be just, you know, a tweeter. It's going to sound terrible, but you'll be able to hear the little beats if you listen closely, because we're going to flip a switch and switch in and out components, and I'll show you which ones are going to switch. I wish I had a crown, Ann. Then we'd definitely do it. First one is this. A and B that we're going to run are... A is just this Martinelli tweeter and a compression driver and a 10 microfarad cap versus the same driver, same cap, but we're going to add a 10 ohm resistor across it. The difference is very subtle. We'll have to really listen. We'll have to not be singing, but you'll hear it. No resistor. So you can see that was subtle but pretty obvious. I didn't even have to tell you when I was going back and forth to heard it. Yeah. It's you can see it. If the model's accurate, and I showed you a measurement. I don't remember what horn I measured, but you know we were losing that little shelf around 400 hertz. We were knocking about 5 decibels there. And again, I don't want to tell you that you don't. It's not that you necessarily don't want that, but. If you didn't know you had it there, you know, you might have 5 decibels more energy right there than you thought. Because, you know, a minimalist designer that likes the single first orders, and sometimes that's a great way to do it, but he's not going to expect, he's going to expect a nice 6 decibel per octave first order curve. And that's not what you have. Not without a damper. Whether or not you want that's... Well, now we're going to go to what? Okay. Now we have 3 and 4. Are these two guys? This is first is a same deal, a first order. Cap. We have a series attenuator, which ends up making the spike bigger. And we then have on the other that we're going to compare it with one that's damped. Well, on these kind of horns, they're real loud, and if you don't have a mid horn and a bass horn, if you're putting a tweeter horn with, say, a direct radiating 12 or something. Yeah, then you got to attenuate this guy about 10 decibels to make it match. You still get the benefits of reduced distortion that a horn can give you and some other stuff, but you're just matching them. But you got to match them right or you get this little peak. So now let me rewire this business. Want you to see the circuit just did. It's nothing to single cap, single resistor that we switched in and out. Thank you. Now this one is a little more subtle, as I recall. It's kind of about the same deal, really. You get the little peak and you get rid of it with the damper. That was pretty subtle there. Because I just was. You can hear him too. That spike is more narrow than the other one. His amplitude is higher, the width of that spike is more narrow. Just the way everything interacts, that's the case. So you can definitely hear it, and it's pretty significant, but not as much as the other one. I can also switch in and out, in this circuit, I can switch in and out top octave compensation, which is this component. Switch in and out this cap, and I will do that for you. About 16K. But that's if you got your crossover set to give you some boost up there, because the curve of a compression horn. On a compression driver on a CD horn, looks like this. Okay, he's down below his resonance, he's doing nothing. Then he comes up and he's strong, and this is somewhere around 800 hertz. This is a 1-inch driver. I'm kind of talking generally here. Everybody's different, but. We got 800 hertz, and somewhere about 4K, we get our first, starting to fall, okay? And I should have done more like this. There's another place where we begin to fall off again, and that was usually about 8K. A couple of things, there's a whole lot of stuff going on besides the electronics. The diaphragm down here is acting as a rigid piston, okay? Up here where he starts to fall, the cone then also usually starts to flex. And now it acts like ripples on a pond, okay? But that also resonates, anyway, resonation. So those little resonant pumps can do some of this business and give more energy. And every compression driver I've ever seen, except for like the CAD drivers, the Beryllium Dome, they do have a little bit of this going on. That also makes your response a little kind of flatter out here. It's got some ripples, but it's got more energy. For some reason, the JBL 2426, which is a titanium driver, he kind of follows the textbook curve. That means he doesn't have much up top. Then, whatever you got going on here, your horn, if it does some collapsing directivity, meaning start to aim the sound more and more as frequency goes up, it'll tend to give you a little bit of EQ acoustically. Myself, I tend to buy horns that try, their uniform directivity this way. I want to cover the whole room, I stick them in a corner or something, I want a pattern that's uniform this way. And I like them when they have a little bit of collapsing directivity here because it gives me some EQ. And I don't really care about this plane for home hi-fi. I care about ceiling bounce and floor bounce. But in general, everybody's listening, either seated or standing, if I got that 40, great. So that gives me some EQ, but you still have downward trend because it isn't enough EQ. So if you put this kind of circuit in there, you put a crossover that gives you this kind of a curve, then you're a conjugate to this. You're counteracting it, and the overall curve then is more like that. And then to answer your question, that's about 16K, on an Eminence driver or a you know, most of the stuff is about that. The TAD goes a little higher. So, here is a circuit where we put a cap that bypasses that attenuator resistor to give us something, a little bit. Real subtle. Can you hear it at all? This is this capacitor right here. A little bit tiny bypass gas. He's real subtle for a couple reasons. One, he's not down in that high energy voice range where you're really hearing the peaking. The other is there's some other things that come into play when you want high frequency compensation. It's not just this capacitor bypassing it, but also the load changing, the load becoming more and more, having more and more impedance, then makes the divider higher. And this particular circuit configuration doesn't give you as much boost on the top end as others, but you can still hear it. Okay. That's what I just did. Now, here's the one that I use, and it's really susceptible to this kind of peaking. I use a third order on my tweeters. I use it because it gives me a lot of rejection of the lows. How are we doing on time? It's almost time. Okay, this gives me a lot of rejection of lows being high order, but it also is real susceptible to peaking. But one of its good news is I get enough of a phase shift that I can align my drivers and get summing, which is perfect. So, but it also lets me use high frequency compensation really nicely too. Where's that other first order? Okay. I'll pass this around. You can see the one we just did. These things double as an antenna. Okay. Now, the reason I wanted you to hear this one is you remember I showed you the second order crossover and how, it's a resonator without a load. Well, it's a resonator with the load too. It's just the load damps it. So the load becomes real, real important. And that's why the third order is susceptible too, because it's a resonator. See, right there and there, we got a resonator. If there's no load, if this guy's open, he's not doing anything, you got a resonator. So this load really is important, and that's the case with any high order crossover above first order. So, these guys, the second order, third order, fourth order, there's good things and bad things about them. You really got to kind of watch them. All right, the first one. The first one, I think, is just a straight third order without any compensation or anything. And he provides that kind of curve. You'll see, kind of like the first order had a little bit of peaking, It came up and then went down a little bit. This third order does that too. He's not a pure third order curve. He's got a little bit of bump from the driver resonance, and then he's got a little bit of interaction, you know, so that he looks a little bit underdamped. Okay, now here's what happens if I try to attenuate him without using some kind of padding. You get a huge nasty peak on that thing. And I think you'll hear that one right away. Okay, yeah. All right, the way I'm doing this on this one, the first one you heard, which is kind of voicey because there's no top octave compensation, that was the just straight third order, this guy. Okay, now we're going to pad him. You got a padding to run him with like a direct radiator or something. If you use just the straight series resistor and you don't put some kind of load, something to damp it, then you get that big old peak. I mean, and it's a lot bigger than even the first order was. And so we're going to switch between these two. One that's just a straight 30 ohm resistor to pad him, and the other that uses a 10 ohm in parallel and a 20 ohm in series to pad him. And you'll hear that peak pretty strongly. So that is why I suggest to model these things in SPICE or measure them or something. And really the point of this whole exercise was just to look at how those reactive components interact and what they do, you know, to make sure that you don't get peaking where you don't want it. So I'm done.